Part 2. Beta Garmin 3. Chapter 14. Broken Hive. Grey fog swirled around Cursor Ferro's armoured eyes as it hunted for the lost Titan. Owing to its role as a scout, a warhound had big windows where its larger kin had only tiny ports or lacked viewing apertures altogether. The oculi did not help in the murk. Large droplets undulated past the thick armour glass, dipping and swimming like a shoal of living things. Dark shapes came and went. With human vision, it was impossible to say if they were solid objects or thicker patches of vapour turning back upon themselves to create the illusion of form. Jahani Jahan heard the restless sea and felt the drag of water upon Cursor Ferro's feet as the swell washed over them, but her eyes saw nothing through the grey. Jahani Jahan relied upon her warhound systems. Cursor Ferro's senses extended far beyond the limitations of flesh. Infrared penetrated the fog perfectly well. A pair of illuminators set into the muzzle of the scout shone invisible light for the machine's broad-spectrum augers. The grainy view on the forward vidscreen was the same as the one fed directly into Jahani Jahan's mind, a grim coastline of broken metal cliffs topped with deadly badlands of razored scrap impossible for god engines to traverse. Sluggish waves pounded on the metal, calling forth mournful booms from newly made sea caves. None of this had existed a few months ago. It was a vista born of destruction, the remains of Jinsu Hive toppled into the Chymist Sea. The warhound skirted reefs of rockcrete and plasteel. Its feet stamped three-toed pools into the sand. Waves rushed in to smooth them out, collapsing the sides, wiping away the Titan's spore. The bigger waves rushed around its greaves, reaching up foaming arms that collapsed into spume before they touched the waist. Splashes from the highest spattered against the warhound's viewports. Sensitive monitoring instruments warned of the ocean's high alkalinity and the dangerous build-up of corrosive salts upon the Titan's casing. The fog, too, was caustic.
"Visibility 4 meters," said steersman Moderati, Natandi Fal. "I recommend a reduction in speed."
"Denied," said Jahani. "Keep up the pace. The tide is coming in. There's not much time for us to investigate the signal."
"As you command, Princeps," said Natandi Fal.
Jahani's mind was half in, half out of the warhound's world. She let her soul take respite in her flesh, away from the burdens of controlling the machine. Cursor Ferro was content to run. The rhythm of its stride and the sway of the head as it swept back and forth rocked Jahani pleasantly. Calm reigned. Though she remained at the edge of full manifold link, Jahani touched the minds of her Moderati. She felt it as Ophira Mendev in left gunnery control stifled a yawn. The edge had gone from her vigilance. Jahani supposed she should bring her crew back into deeper cohesion, but she let them relax. Since arriving on Beta Garmin 3, there had been no rest. Every day saw another battle. Nobody on either side seemed to have a grasp on strategy. Traitor formations came in at random, all types, but they were relentless. Whether intentionally or not, their attacks were wearing down the Legio. The transponder pulsed on the edge of her awareness. Not far now. The electronic signature song of a missing Legio Defensor Titan. She regretted the approaching conclusion to the mission. She enjoyed the distance from Escher far more than freedom from battle. The years of their friendship were so far back in the past. What memories she had of it became more shriveled and grotesque as time passed, like a mummifying corpse. Escher should have released her to another maniple. It is what she would have done. But Escher was stubborn, as well as condescending, and would not let her go. 2 decades later, she was still clinging on. There was no fighting around Jinsu Hive anymore. It had been burning when Legio Solaria made planetfall.
Temperatures were so high the metal itself was ablaze, the tech priest said. The 8,000-meter height of the hive acted like a giant chimney, funneling fire through its guts with the efficacy of a blast furnace. For 2 weeks it had burned on the horizon like a giant sacrificial bonfire, hiding the sun with toxic gases, until it had collapsed in the dead of night. The spires of the uppermost levels crashed down into the mid-hive. The mid-hive compacted into the under-hive. High towers toppled into the sea in a new promontory, laid out like a sleeping giant's corpse. 300 million people had died there. Jahani Jahan could hardly imagine what that many people would look like. She had tried conjuring graphical representations through Cursor Pharaoh's cogitators. Even they, with clearly marked comparators, could not convey the scale of the loss of life. And Jinsu was just one hive on one world. The death toll was unremarkable in the Garmin cluster. Innumerable people had died, billions on Beta Garmin II alone. There were adepts at the camp whose role it was to record these things. They struggled. Outside the adepter, in the rank and file, a name had arisen for this stupendous cull of humanity. It was simple, direct, apt enough to cross the boundaries between the various military organizations and the ranks within. They were calling it the Great Slaughter. Jahani Jahan shuddered at the name. The glory days of the Crusade seemed so long ago. Her experiences in the conquest of recalcitrant human civilizations and the extermination of alien life were rendered irrelevant in the moment of the War Master's betrayal. No one could prepare for this kind of war. Total, all-devouring, merciless. Preservation of life and infrastructure went by the wayside. She had heard some Imperial commanders were bombing their own cities, killing thousands to destroy a handful of enemies. The Garmin cluster was sinking into blood madness. Legio of both sides operated without restraint. The devastation they caused was horrifying. She had been proud of her god engine. Now she feared it a little. Arrogant by nature, Jahani Jahan found new character traits soon after her first engagement with another Legio. She had discovered caution. She slipped deeper into Cursor Pharaoh's mind. The Legio Defensor identification signal called to her. Bodily fatigue receded. She was lifted up by Cursor Pharaoh's uncomplaining strength. But even so, she needed to disconnect soon. She needed sleep. Her head throbbed, and she felt sluggish. Her response times were way down, her thoughts thick and syrupy. She concentrated, forcing herself to think. Readings could be falsified. It would not be the first time a friendly signum had been used as a lure in an ambush. But it had to be inspected.
Hard right,
she ordered, mentally forcing the head to turn as she issued the command. They would follow the signal. She chose a roundabout path around the newborn coast and let herself blend further into Cursor Pharaoh's being. Cursor Pharaoh's neural jack dragged at the back of Jahani's skull. Her neck muscles ached with the effort of supporting it. Her thoughts strayed to Legio Vulpa more and more often. The day at Bifex, when Vulpa had given them a glimpse of their true nature, had been a foretaste of what was to come. She had known from the moment the Legios met each other that Vulpa were callous. In the aftermath, it was not only relations with Legio Vulpa that had been poisoned. The crews had changed. The machines had changed. God machines were engineered for war, but though their souls were aggressive, every engine took on the imprint of its pilots, and over time, as echoes of dozens of women were left upon them, their personalities were shaped one way or another. The war machines of Legio Solaria had been as disgusted at Vulpa's actions as the crews. Emotions were intensified and reflected back onto their crews by the manifold. The moment Vulpa showed their true colours, Jahani Jahan's friendship with Esher Ani Mohana had come to an end. Jahani told herself she was ashamed to have shown weakness in front of her princeps. She had panicked when Vulpa walked into Bifex, But the real reason was Abhani Luce. It was always Abhani. When she'd found out about the pregnancy, she'd been glad for her friend. Things were different then, before Bifex.
"I'm with child,"
Esher had told her. She came straight out with it one evening. It had been a day of sunlight, a few months before their transit to Dendritica, and the first steps on the path that led them to Bifex.
"Are you serious?" Jahani said.
She was reading in an alcove of a high window, looking out over the tiered paddy fields of Barkan's world. There had been time for leisure, once upon a time.
"Absolutely."
Esher's face glowed with the news. Jahani smiled. Her friend might have looked ecstatic, but Jahani had been around women when they had discovered they were unexpectedly pregnant. Shock was the first emotion, every single time. Whether they hid it or not, they felt it.
"How?"
said Jahani. She laid her book face down on the cushion. Barkan's world was a pretty planet, or rather what was left of it after compliance was pretty. Light reflected off the stepped fields in sinuous bends over the moulded plaster ceiling. Esher smiled. Jahani's eyes widened.
"No. That princeps with Volpa. Hartek.
You needn't say it like I'm about to elope. It was but the once. He's too sure of himself for me to pursue the relationship.
Coming from a Titan princeps, that is a statement rich in irony,"
Jahani said. She picked up her book again.
"No congratulations,"
said Esher. Jahani looked over the top of the book.
"Congratulations. You're not happy for me," said Esher.
She sat down beside her friend.
"Now that's your hormones talking. Machine, Force, and Omnisire alone knows what they'll do to Bestia Est. Have you ever been aboard a broody war engine?"
She shook her head.
"I have."
"Jahani, please," said Esher. She was upset. That was not like her.
"I'm sorry."
Jahani reached out her hand and clasped Esher's.
"Seriously, I meant it." "Then you are pleased?" "So long as I don't have to help you raise the thing, I am very pleased." "What are you reading?" "Some religious tract I found on one of the doulas. Lectitio Divinitatus. It's very ornate. A hard read." "Is it interesting?" "In a disturbing kind of way. These people believe the Emperor is a god in his own right. Not the Omnisire, something else. Completely against the cult mechanicus and the imperial truth."
"Really?" Esher frowned.
"Really?"
Jahani said.
"You better get rid of it."
"I suppose." She looked at the cover.
"What are you going to do with the child?"
"What do you mean?"
"Come on, you had to think about it. Will it remain with us or go to them? What agreement did you reach?"
"No gene contract was exchanged," said Esher. "It really was unexpected."
"I don't know."
"Something was exchanged," said Jahani with a smirk.
"So this is totally unofficial?"
"Completely.
A spur of the moment tryst." "Will she join us?"
"If it is a she. If not, then he'll go to the priesthood."
"Cog and tooth. You didn't even choose the sex,"
said Jahani.
"I did not plan for this to happen, I keep saying."
"Then tell me," Jahani said. "When did it happen? Where?"
"Before the greeting banquet."
She hesitated.
"At the moment of exchange. In the Hall of Armaments."
"Esher," said Jahani, mock scandalized.
"And where the machine gods could see? You should be ashamed."
She was joking, mostly. Esher laughed.
"What use is life if you don't live it a little every now and then?"
Now, years later, Jahani Jahan reflected on those words. There was no time to live anymore, only fight to survive. Esher's quiet joy at the child's imminence turned to shame when ties were broken with Legio Volpa. Jahani had grown cold towards her when she had decided to carry the baby to term. She admitted it freely. It seemed harsh, but it was as it was. A friendship forged in the manifold was among the strongest of all. Their estrangement had hurt them both, but she could not countenance welcoming the genes of that legio into the Imperial Hunters. She still struggled. Ironically, she had nothing personal against Abhani. She was a good princeps, if a little headstrong. It was the principle of the thing. Escher had put herself before the legio. She could never forgive that.
"Legio first," she said to herself. "Always legio first."
"Princeps," the Tandifal spoke tersely. "Princeps ahead! Princeps! You're drifting!"
"All halt!" Natandi Fal spoke out, and brought the Titan to a stop. Cursor Ferro reluctantly complied. It set its legs firm against the surging of the ocean.
"What is happening?"
Jahani Jahan dragged her attention away from her memories.
"You were machine lost. Cursor Ferro requires guidance here. He would have walked on into danger were it not for me."
Natandi Fal was too sure of herself. She had her sights set on Jahani's throne.
"I am in control,"
Jahani said.
"See for yourself, Princeps, ahead. Our way is blocked."
The visual feed was never deactivated, but a Princeps was fed so much information they were trained to compartmentalize it. To see what the Titan saw through her eyes, she had to focus. Her attention had to be active. She looked within herself. Through Cursor Ferro's auguries, she saw a cliff extending upwards into the sky. There was a slight curve to it, but besides that it was featureless, a single giant slab of plasteel bonded rockcrete, part of the outer shell of the fallen hive.
"Your orders, Princeps."
Jahani had Cursor Ferro pace around to face the coast. The wall cliff sliced through the debris that made up the new shoreline, laying down a mighty headland. Water sucked itself into churning eddies around skerries of metal and shattered rockcrete. Within the compacted mass of the cliff was evidence of cavities, machine halls, and great conduits, crushed down to the size of ration tins. There was no way through in that direction. The water was deepening by the moment. Waves rocked Cursor Ferro as the tide came in.
"Go out, Princeps. Deeper. Go out into the sea. Take us around the obstruction."
"The water will cover us over," said Callis Nen,
Cursor Ferro's moderati oratorius.
"The cliffs are impassable. This machine is proof against the void. Water cannot harm it. 80 degrees right now."
"As you command, Princeps," said Natandi Fal.
Jahani let Natandi Fal pilot the Titan without her direct input. She kept her mind above the manifold, watching as much through the Titan's cockpit windows as through its eyes. The mist was thinning. The cliff was visible intermittently through the oculus. Now seen with human sight, the view was as grey and miserable as it had appeared in monochrome heat vision.
"Turn executed.
Relinquish control," Jahani ordered Fal. She pushed her mind deeper into the link with the machine. The Titan and she came close to full union, and together they walked into the ocean. The seabed shelved off quickly. The new cliffs had forced the coast far out into the water, and though the Chymist Sea's sublittoral region had a gentle slope, the edge of the continental shelf was close. Within 100 steps, the water rose to Cursor Ferro's waist. As it waded forwards, it collected the rubbish of industry ejected into the water over millennia. Long-lived plastics yellowed by exposure to the sun joined together with the carbonized debris of the hive's demise into a raft of rubbish around the Titan.
"Soundings indicate the shelf ends close to the edge of the barrier," said Callis Nen.
"We have seen it,"
said Jahani Jahan. Her eyes were closed. Her primary sensory input was that of the Titan. Cursor Ferro's simple soul merged with her own.
"We proceed."
The water came up to the Titan's head. The cliff seemed no more negotiable. Waste-choked water slapped at the Titan's canine muzzle. The waves touched the base of its viewports.
"Seal atmospheric vents," ordered Jahani. "Prepare cooling systems for density change."
The bigger waves washed over the windows, getting higher and higher. The top of the armor glass showed clear air near the top, a submarine view in the rest. The clear, well-defined line of the water's meniscus divided the two. Then that sliver of air was gone. The head plunged beneath the surface, and only the curved back of the warhound remained above water. The sound of the reactor shifted as its cooling systems took on water instead of air. The shimmer of exhaust heat was replaced by a blast of roaring steam that subsided to a bubble as it submerged completely. Now entirely underwater, the Titan leaned forward to better push against the resistance of the sea.
The edge of the shelf is close. Water depth increases greatly 930 meters from our position, increasingly more so thereafter, said Kallis Nen.
I am aware, said Jahani Jahan.
The clouded water was opaque, even to the infrared, and she was forced to rely on high-intensity sonar bursts. The contours of the seabed raced through her mind with each pulse. The seabed had buckled with pressure ridges under the weight of the hive, making the going difficult. Debris from the hive collapse worsened the situation. Cursor Ferro pushed on, unperturbed by the change in medium it moved through. The machine's swaggering walk was exaggerated in the water, though it had ceased to swing its head back and forth, but pointed its nose in the direction of travel, changing the whole feel of the Titan's motion. The great black guillotine blade of the hive section reared high beside them, its leading edge cutting the water as far as the machine could see. To their right, the prospect was hardly lighter. A shift from black-brown to grey-brown was all that defined what was obstacle and what was open sea.
"Edge of continental shelf, 40 meters," warned Kallis Nen.
She, too, was deep in the manifold, and her voice was quiet.
"We see the end," said Jahani.
The artificial cliff ended abruptly, the top part sheared off by some apocalyptic starship weapon. At the surface, where the sun shone off the rolling waves, brighter metal glinted. A narrow ledge ran in front of the wall, no more than 15 meters wide. Beyond that, the seabed plunged into the inky blackness of the mesopelagic zone.
"We go forwards," said Jahani Jahan.
The Titan saw the danger and moved cautiously. The blackness to its right seemed to move upwards from the deeps, poised to swallow them all. Cursor Ferro walked in front of the promontory with a somnambulist's slow gait. To their left, the strata of the hive shell were laid open for them to see. 6 meters of plasteel bonded to rockcrete, then a thick ferrocrete layer honeycombed for strength and lightness, its cavities already being colonized by Beta Garmin III's aquatic life. What remained of the world's native ecosystem was hardy enough to tolerate the polluted sea. The toxic corpse of the great hive posed it no difficulties.
"Steady,"
said Jahani Jahan. Natandi Fal lent her mental strength to guide the Titan. Beyond the hive casing, scraps of the internal structure clung on, a briar patch of tangled metal that projected beyond the shell limit. Strong currents welled up from marine depths, mixing with the shore drift to create a mess of vortices. Thickets of metal swayed like weeds in the flow. Cursor Ferro slowed.
"Steady,"
Jahani Jahan ordered. The inferno cannon caught on a projecting spar and squealed along it. The Titan's foot slipped. The impact of metal on metal resounded up the Titan's left leg. Cursor Ferro tilted to the right. Through the right eye, the ocean waited. Jahani Jahan brought Cursor Ferro to a halt before it could topple over. Half a dozen toxins sounded at once.
"Fouling around the left claw,"
reported Ophira Mendev.
"We didn't see it,"
said Jahani, speaking for the machine as much as herself.
"Kellis, integrate with the sensorium. Aid me."
"Yes, Princeps."
With Kallis's help, the radar image sharpened enough for Jahani Jahan to see the snag of metal caught around Cursor Ferro's ankle.
"I'll pull us out," she said. "Increase reactor output."
The machine song deepened. The Titan tensed. The left leg pulled hard against the snare. Something gave, and Cursor Ferro lurched. Jahani brought her machine to another halt. The right foot was at the edge of the abyss. Freedom lay 50 meters further on.
"Machine God, I beg of you, preserve your servants and your devices," she thought into the manifold.
"Full power to locomotors," she commanded.
The whine of climbing power output sang in the cockpit, joining the trill of alarms in holy chorus. The Titan leaned. Its left foot moved. Jahani took a step with the right, moving the claw away from the edge of the cliff. Machinery pushed to its limit howled its anguish through the Titan structure. Without warning, the snag gave way. Cursofero lunged in the water, tottering out to the cliff edge again. It hung at the point of disaster, as upwells of water buffeted it, before Jahani Jahan forced the machine back from the edge and around the last of the obstacles. Cursofero picked up speed. The transponder signal throbbed in Jahani Jahan's mind. Aligning herself directly with the source, Jahani Jahan pushed the Titan back inshore. Cursofero emerged into a bay of metal. Brighter light, then air, appeared at the top of its oculi. A body banged into the armor glass. Cursofero's eyes revealed many more. The water was carpeted with corpses. Thousands of them had been corralled by the currents in the new bay. They lolled on the waves, turning the ocean's churn into a lazy rolling. They were bloated by submersion, eaten at by the corrosive nature of the water. The ocean teemed with tiny crustaceans nibbling at this bounty. The water had become a soup. While Cursofero had been submerged, visibility had improved to several hundred meters. The carpet of corpses stretched into the distance. Jahani Jahan ignored the dead and marched onwards towards the shore of broken rockcrete and shorn metal. Waves threw corpses up onto the debris and plucked them back down. Cursofero waded through the water and the flesh. Bodies thumped onto the Zella. Water cascaded down its sides. "The signal is a hit," said Jahani Jahan. They rounded a jagged island of tangled industrial machinery, into another bay full of corpses, and towards another headland. They turned back out to sea to pass it, facing out over an ocean sealed beneath human flesh, then back inshore again. Passing the headland, they cleared the major part of the spire wreckage. The last shreds of mist were scudding away under a rising breeze. Sunlight broke through clouds of smoke. The greater body of the city was a black heap in the distance, studded with raging fires. Foothills of piled hablocks and outlying industrial facilities climbed up to the wreck. The remains of docks reached out into the sea. Carefully, Cursofero picked its way through the ruins of millions of lives. The streets were choked with bones stripped of flesh by bioweaponry. Cursofero's feet crushed them to powder. The signal of the missing Legio Defensor Titan squealed in the cockpit. They turned a corner, and the dead Titan was ahead, sprawled into the side of a warehouse, a greater corpse in a world of corpses. Cursofero stalked over to its fallen kin. The machine was a Rapier-class scout, a lighter, swifter machine than even a warhound.
"I've not seen one of these for a while," said Fowl. "The alacrity of thought. This is the missing engine. The transponder signal is standard Imperial recognition pattern," said Callis Nen.
"When did that start to mean something again?" asked Fowl. "It could still be a trap."
Jahani Jahan shut her eyes and reached through the maniple into Cursofero's extensive Auspex suite.
"No sign of life, no mechanisms active. We are in the land of the dead."
"Bring us around it," said Jahani Jahan.
She shucked off her princeps harness and paid out the neural link cable so she could get close to the window.
"Halt!"
The Rapier was so much twisted wreckage. There was no chance its three moderati could have survived. The devastation was total. The weapon that had brought it low left little more than blackened adamantium bones and a portion of the torso.
"Whatever did this was powerful." Jahani Jahan looked around.
"Do you have confirmation of identification?"
Callis Nen frowned.
"There is weak activity from the Titan's infospheric links. I am attempting to boost it."
Her hands moved over her station's manual control deck. Electronic screeching puttered out of the speakers, grew in volume and resolved itself into a tortured harmony of Bin Harrick. Cursofero's systems translated the sounds into words that lit themselves in trails of phosphor all over the Zella's internal screens.
"I am the Titan, Alacrity of Thought. I am no more. I am the Titan, Alacrity of Thought. I am no more." I am the Titan Alacrity of Thought.
Profound sorrow overtook the crew as they listened to the machine's lament. Cursor Pharaoh shifted on its great pistons. It stood erect and scanned its hound's head across the desolate surroundings. There was not a living thing to be seen. Jahani stared down at the wreck a moment longer, then returned to her throne.
We have found what we came for. We will return to base. There is no sign of the crew, Jahani, said Kallis Nen. Should we look? We will not find any, she said. If they were not dead when the Titan fell, they will be now. Look at this place. It is a maze. The water is toxic. The air is barely breathable. There are no further signals. It would be unwise to linger here. Major Sperontius.
She depressed a manual vox switch in her throne, connecting her with the Titan's reactor chamber.
Have you seen what Cursor Pharaoh sees?
I have.
Is the Alacrity of Thought salvageable?
Regrettably not, the Major sighed. Do not let his remains and machine spirit fall into the hands of our foe.
I agree.
She clicked the vox link off and settled back onto her throne.
Natandi, take us back and target the wreck. Ophira, Demonstini, fire at will.
Cursor Pharaoh took a few paces backwards, knocking down the remnants of walls and walkways as it lined itself up on the dead Titan. Jahani snapped the locks of her restraints closed and settled back into her throne.
Fire,
she said. A gout of flame gushed from the Titan's inferno cannon, heating Alacrity of Thought's broken bones to a cherry red. The cabin vibrated as Cursor Pharaoh's Vulcan megabolters rotated up to firing speed. Thousands of rounds slammed into the broken Titan, punching bright holes into its glowing hide. The lament died along with the last flickers of life in the machine.
It's gone, said Jahani.
Turn us about. We depart.
Cursor Pharaoh sang a dirge through its war horns as it waded back into the sea of corpses.